Welcome to Behind the Headlines. We're about to take you right across the UK, looking at some of the stories we've been covering. Today, we're talking selfie tattoos, the animals that could be costing us millions. And as excitement builds for the next Paddington film, we speak to not one, but two of its stars. My name's Louise Easton. I'm going to be your host over the next 10 minutes or so on Thursday, the 7th of November, 2024. Now, with one in four people in the UK having a tattoo, it's likely that you or someone you know has one, but did you do them yourself? Well, tattoo removal clinics are telling us they've seen a wave of people inking themselves, inspired by something they've seen online. They're now urging people not to buy equipment and have a go and end up doing something they'll regret. Our reporter Mickey Welsh has been covering this one and speaking to a laser removal expert in Newcastle for us.
Come on, own up. Who's got a tattoo that they regret? Double own up. Did you do it yourself? Everybody loves a bit of DIY nowadays. Well, maybe it's not. But a DIY tattoo? That's too far, surely. Rate runs Clear Skin in Newcastle. He told us at least once a week, somebody's turning up needing a tat removed that they or their mates did to them.
I once had a phone call from three parents within 4 days where the kids had bought a gun online during lockdown and tattooed obscenities on themselves. And they were 13, 14-year-old. The parents are phoning up asking if we could remove the tattoos and we can't touch them till they're 18 years old.
Where if you've got a self-made piece of art on your body that you regret, you're not alone. Ray says it's a worrying trend that sees youngsters buying cheap equipment and just winging it.
My friend's son came in. Him and his mates had bought a tattoo gun off eBay and he had his girlfriend's, ex-girlfriend's name on his backside. They buy them and they just start doodling. You know, it's like sitting at your desk board with a bit of paper and a pen doing little doodly squiggles.
His advice, please don't think you're better than a trained, fully licensed professional tattoo artist because you might just regret it in the end. Ray would be happy for his business though because you'll be paying him to remove them.
We've got one of the best lasers in the world. We can remove tattoos, but not all tattoos can be removed. And if you're not trained and you don't know what you're doing, you could put the wrong ink in, you could go too deep, you can scar yourself. Don't do it.
Head on to our socials, you can find out more about DIY tattoos.
Imagine your children were taken out of the country and you have no legal means of getting them back. Well, that's exactly the situation Nathan Gilmore from Ayrshire has been living with for more than 5 years. His ex-partner went abroad with their son and daughter amid a custody dispute. And in Scotland, unlike England and Wales, it's not an offence to do that without the consent of both parents. Nathan's been fighting to have that legal loophole closed. And on Monday, with the Scottish Government's travelling cabinet visiting Ayr, he was able to discuss his situation with First Minister John Swinney. He's been chatting with our reporter, Tom Grant.
Monday, John Swinney, his cabinet visit Ayr. I'm assuming then you maybe spotted that somewhere in the media that they were coming to town and thought, this is my opportunity to get him face to face and put a question to him.
Yeah, it's been really difficult to try and get that platform with some of the senior officials and ministers. And this was a great opportunity, yeah, to hopefully have a question answered.
You chatted afterwards. The question was asked, I was there, and he said to you, let's have a chat one-to-one after the actual town hall. What was discussed? And has he given you kind of any, you know, optimism for the future? Because let's be clear, in terms of what you told me off camera was your situation can't really be fixed right now. Yeah. But you're doing this now for other kids and other dads and other mums, mm-hmm. who could potentially be in your situation in the future.
Yeah, that's right. I sorely miss my kids. I have done for the last 5 years. But this is not about my children. This is a wider issue. And so... yeah, we spoke at length and he was very interested to know about the contact that we had already had, that myself and legal consultant and advocate have had with the Scottish Government, with civil servants. And he suggested that he would now contact a civil servant that was involved in the research and the consultation process and look for an update on that. And he would be keen to meet again to discuss that. And in these circumstances, you kind of lose hope. You lose hope in your personal circumstance. You lose hope in a political system. But Mr. Swinney maybe kind of rekindled some of that hope on Monday.
Well, our reporter Paul Kelly joins us off the back of that chat. Paul, I mentioned before that the rules are different in Scotland than they are in England and Wales. Can you just explain that a little bit further, please?
Yes, well, the Child Abduction Act of 1984 makes it an offence to take a child out of the country without the consent of both parents. But in Scotland, that law was changed slightly because another similar offence already existed in Scots law, but one which was only ever intended to be temporary. Concerns were raised with this as far back as 1990, but officials at that time decided not to pass those on to UK government ministers. It's a situation which, as Nathan says himself in his conversation with Tom, has led to cases of children being brought to Scotland from England in order to take advantage of that loophole and to take them out of the country.
And for Nathan, he said he's not doing this for himself, but how likely is he to get his children back?
Well, I think Nathan understands better than anyone how long this process can take. He was first told a consultation document would be drafted 2 years ago, and he's still waiting for that. So we're realistically still some time from seeing the law actually changed, if it even gets that far. He has been able to establish limited contact with his children and was able to visit them in April this year, the first time he'd seen them since 2018. So I think between that and his meeting with John Swinney, there's definitely more optimism for Nathan than there was a few years ago.
Okay, thanks, Paul. You're listening to Behind the Headlines. Farmers in South Yorkshire are telling us they're doubtful if the next generation will be able to follow in their footsteps and make a living from agriculture. It's following new government plans announced in the budget last week around inheritance tax, meaning agricultural assets worth over £1 million will be charged at 20% from 2026. Our senior reporter Chris Davis-Smith has more on this one.
The tractor engines are still roaring for now on Wincover Farm in Wath-upon-Dearne, but the future has never felt more uncertain here after the proposed changes put forward in Labour's recent autumn budget.
We basically grow crops to put food on the table. So we grow wheat for making bread. We produce barley, which is malting barley for making beer and whiskey.
That's Mark Downing, who owns Wincover Farm and Chestnut Farm just down the road in Sprotbrough. He tells me he's going to protest against what's been announced recently by the government down at Westminster later this month with other members of the National Farmers Union. Now, you're the fifth generation farmer. On the back of this recent announcement in the budget around inheritance tax, do you fear for the future of the industry?
Massively. This is single-handedly the biggest thing that's affected agriculture potentially. Our two farms, guessing, could be worth £3-4 million, and then to be sort of taxed 20% of that, it would be catastrophic.
The new Shadow Environment Secretary says the crass decision to remove some inheritance tax relief for farms shows the government's lack of knowledge about the countryside.
On the 30th anniversary of the disappearance of a teenager from Calderdale in West Yorkshire, a renewed murder appeal has been launched. Lindsay Reimer was just 13 years old when she went missing from Hebden Bridge. Our senior reporter Katie Lyons has more.
Lindsay was last seen in the town's memorial gardens, and the next morning alarms were raised when she didn't turn up for her paper round. The schoolgirl's body was found in Rochdale Canal, about a mile away from her home, 5 months later. Her murder was never solved.
She was a bright, inquisitive, independent girl, and on November the 7th, 1994, she did what any 13-year-old girl should be allowed to do. She went to local shop.
That's James Entwistle, a detective chief inspector at West Yorkshire Police. He, just like her family, wants answers. Kate is Lindsay's older sister.
We are still requesting information for people to come forward. And I looked up the definition of justice, and I think we all feel, that if you know something about my sister's murder and the person who killed her, you have a moral obligation to come forward.
Anyone with information is being urged to contact police.
HS2 are set to spend £100 million on a special tunnel for bats in Buckinghamshire. Company bosses say they've had to because all the animals are legally protected in the UK. Planners are calling it a shed. Well, our reporter Zoe Head-Thomas has more on this.
It's all set to be built around a kilometre of the line next to Sheephouse Woods, so bats can cross safely. Other options like a tunnel or rerouting the line were considered, but rejected due to cost, while the project's already over budget by £30 billion. HS2 chairman Sir John Thompson says it just goes to show how difficult it is to complete big infrastructure projects in the UK, claiming people who criticise their financial management never think about bats.
And it's almost time for another adventure with the nation's favourite little bear, Paddington. The third film in the franchise, Paddington in Peru, is out tomorrow, in which we'll see the duffel coat-wearing bear travel to see his Aunt Lucy at the home for retired bears. So, if you have a cuppa and a marmalade sandwich to hand, sit back and listen in to when our entertainment reporter Olivia Marks caught up with two of the film's stars, Olivia Colman and Antonio Banderas.
You're both obviously newbies to the Paddington world. Did you get a Paddington starter pack?
We got marmalade, didn't we?
We got a bunch of things, even a Paddington, you know.
Oh, yes, and a Paddington.
And, you know, a little details, maps of Peru. We got a bag with gifts.
And actually, when you're filming, which isn't in our starter pack, but all of the signs, do you remember, please drive slowly, bears are here.
True.
And the whole world that you go into is so cute.
The harbour, oh my God, everything that they created, the art directors of this movie are unbelievable.
Yeah.
They did an amazing job. And, you know, the reason that I'm saying that is because many of the interviewers that came over here, they thought that we shot in Peru.
I don't trust anyone who doesn't cry watching Paddington.
Yeah.
What's the last film that made you guys cry?
I cry almost everything.
There are many movies, actually, that made me cry. I cannot tell you a specific title now. I am a fast crier.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm similar. Although Danny Dyer made me cry in Rivals the other day. Not a film, but
so good.
It's the sensational thing.
Well, there you go. A little insight into the movie and a bonus recommendation from Olivia there. For more on these stories, head to the news pages of our website or check out our social media channels. And be sure to come back again tomorrow when we'll continue to take you behind the headlines.